I'm Stephen Hundley, and this is the award-winning podcast, Leading Improvements in Higher Education, a service of the Assessment Institute in Indianapolis. Our sponsor for this season is the Center for Assessment and Research Studies at James Madison University. In this episode, we have a conversation with the co-editors of the Routledge book, Exemplars of Assessment in Higher Education, Volume 2, Strategies for a Changing Higher Education Environment. Our guests are Jane Marie Souza and Tara Rose. Jane Marie is Associate Vice President for Accreditation and Accreditation Liaison Officer at the University of Rochester. Tara is Interim Associate Vice Provost and Director of Assessment at Louisiana State University. I know you will enjoy the insights shared by Jane Marie and Tara during this episode of Leading Improvements in Higher Education. I'm so delighted that we have Jane Marie and Tara with us today to talk about their latest book. Jane Marie, Tara, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Stephen, and thank you very much for inviting us. We love the opportunity to discuss our book with you.
Yes, thank you, Stephen. We appreciate the opportunity to speak to the audience. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And I know our audience will benefit from our conversation. So longtime listeners know that as we begin, we always like to learn a little bit about each of our guests and their background. So we'd like to do that with both of you right now. Jane Marie, we'll start with you, followed by Tara. And we'd like you to tell us a little bit about yourself, including some of your career highlights and what you do in your current role. Jane Marie.
Great. Career highlights. Okay, I'm Jane Marie Souza, and I'm currently serving as the Associate Vice Provost for Accreditation and the Accreditation Liaison Officer for the University of Rochester in New York. Some of the highlights, I think, is I served as a peer reviewer for four accrediting agencies over the years, and I've been involved with assessment since before it was cool. Actually, way back in the 1990s, I won my first assessment award. One important thing to note, and I think it has relevance here, is that I served as the president of ALHE, that's the Association for Assessment of Learning in Higher Education, and editor of its publication, Intersection. And that relevance will come up in a little bit.
Jane Marie, thank you. And now we come to Tara.
Yes, thank you, Stephen. I currently serve as the Interim Associate Vice Provost and Director of Assessment at Louisiana State University here in Baton Rouge. I have over two decades of experience in assessment, 10 years in teaching. Like Jane Marie, I was also on the board of AALHE and held the position of president in 2015-16. In my first year at LSU, I founded the Louisiana Assessment Group. And since 2019, I have been a senior fellow with the American Association of Colleges and Universities, AACNU.
Tara, thank you. Tara and Jane Marie both mentioned a couple of acronyms, those being AACNU and AALHE. And I invite listeners to consult prior seasons of this podcast, Leading Improvements in Higher Education, where we've had the opportunity to have conversations with principals from both of those organizations. We're going to be spending a lot of our time today talking about the Routledge book you both co-edited. And this book was entitled Exemplars of Assessment in Higher Education, Volume 2, Strategies for a Changing Higher Education Environment. What inspired the first volume and what was the inspiration? How is the inspiration, I should say, different for the second volume? Jane Marie, we'd like to ask you to answer these questions, including how recent national and global events have influenced your work on the second volume. Jane Marie.
Thank you, Stephen. I actually think it's a pretty interesting story. As mentioned earlier, the connection with AALHE is significant. When I was editor-in-chief of the Intersection, I published a series of interviews with the officers of all the former regional accreditors. Now, of course, they are the institutional accreditors. And I also moderated a panel session at the annual conference for 7 years called Conversations with Accreditors. And it was after one of those panel sessions that Tara came up to me and noted that people are always asking for what are examples of what the accreditors consider to be good assessment practice. They never cite specific examples. So we chatted and decided it would be great if we could publish a collection of exemplars that were recommended by the actual accreditors. We didn't know if they would engage with us on that, but they did, starting with Middle States Commission on Higher Education. The president there, Dr. Heather Perfetti, was really enthusiastic about the project and gave us our first recommendations. The others followed. So she ended up being the writing the foreword for the first volume, interestingly enough. Then what happened, as we all know, the world changed in 2020. Our book, Volume 1, was started in 2019, and most of the writing happened prior to the murder of George Floyd and prior to March 2020, when the COVID-19 was called a world pandemic. So we all know that changed higher education dramatically and influenced the way we assessed in higher education. So Tara and I put our heads together again and thought, gee, I think we think it would be grateful to produce a second volume that was written after the world changed in those significant ways. We thought our readers might be grateful to have some of the examples under very changing environmental circumstances. I do want to note that the first volume was co-published with Stylus and ALHE, and all the royalties go to ALHE. And the second volume was co-published by AACNU, and the president of AACNU wrote the foreword for that. So Routledge and AACNU published the second one, and the royalties go to AACNU.
Jane Marie, thank you for sharing with us the origin and the development of the first volume and what also led to the creation of the second volume. And I will note for our listeners, we will paste a link and post a link, I should say, in our show notes that provide links to both the first volume and the second volume. So Tara, as we have been discussing, there are now two volumes of Exemplars of Assessment in Higher Education. So in what ways are there similar themes between each volume, noting, of course, as Jane Marie mentioned, the significant changes that have happened in our society over the last few years? And how did you go about soliciting contributors for the second volume? Tara.
Yeah, Stephen, thank you. So as Jane Marie mentioned, colleges and universities still struggle today to understand precisely what is being asked for by accreditors. And so both volumes answer that question by sharing examples of successful assessment practices. What we find valuable as editors is that we did not select any of the institutions represented. So all the institutions that you will find in both volumes were suggested by accreditors. Volume one themes were focused on more generalized assessment strategies, specifically relating to student learning, faculty engagement, and institutional effectiveness. Whereas volume two focused on assessment strategies related to distance education, general education, career readiness, and diversity, equity, and inclusion. As for soliciting contributors, we followed the same process as volume one. We contacted the accreditors and we asked them if they would recommend institutions that have demonstrated effective assessment practices in one of those four given themes. And to our luck, the majority of all the accreditors were very receptive in providing us multiple institutions, in fact, that we were able to use and highlight in the book.
Tara, thank you. You were describing how Volume 2 was produced. And of course, we are talking about the books, both Volume 1 and Volume 2, entitled Exemplars of Assessment in Higher Education. So, Jane Marie, we have noted that the second volume of Exemplars of Assessment in Higher Education is organized, as Tara was mentioning, around four timely themes for colleges and universities, those being diversity, equity, and inclusion, distance education, career readiness, and general education. I would like to take each part, say, in order and discuss with both of you some of the themes from that part. So we'll start naturally with
Part 1, which focuses on diversity, equity, and inclusion. What have contributors to this section of the book outlined related to this important imperative? For this question in part 1, we'll start with Jane Marie.
Thank you. There are 4 chapters in this section of volume 2 devoted to diversity, equity, and inclusion. I'd like to focus on 2 examples from this particular theme. Howard University authored one of the chapters, and they challenged the way that we learn assessment by replicating what other institutions have done, rather than look reflectively at the institution's own mission, vision, and their culture. So they tell their story about how they had an accreditation visit coming up, and they just found out what everybody else was doing well to be successful with a accreditation visit, and they followed that model. It was after that accreditation event that they really said that we need to focus on our own storytelling, using storytelling as a tool for data collection and dissemination in an organic and authentic way that really respects the rich history of the HBCU at Howard University. They demonstrate through their chapter how they embraced providing agency to faculty and to students. And they tell that story using language such as, I'll just give you a brief example. They asked faculty to store their assessment stories rather than asking them to submit them. It's a subtle, but if you think about it, a very powerful distinction. Another chapter in this particular theme was contributed by Cabrillo College. They are soon to be known as another name. They're in the process of changing their name. And that's a significant part of the story that they tell. Because after the murder of George Floyd, they engaged in a 2-year reflection about the college's role in promoting diversity, equity, and inclusion. Their institution, Cabrillo, was named after a navigator for the Spanish Empire who was engaged in atrocities involving indigenous people. So as they focus on equity and inclusion, they really wanted to address the name of their college. They still haven't, and I checked their website just last week, they still haven't formally adopted the new name, but watch, it will be changing. This chapter focuses on equity gaps in student achievement. And they share really detailed strategies and disaggregated data from the work on the acceleration movement in remedial education. They're trying to move students more quickly through the process and get them through the remedial non-credit coursework to the credit-bearing coursework at their institution. And an important note with them is all their work was done in the context of 3 crises at the same time. One was the Lightning Fire, in which a third of their district was evacuated. The second was the murder of George Floyd, and the third was the pandemic. So they were dealing with all of these crises, and they really get into how those impacted the work at their institution. Very interesting story to read about.
Jane Marie, thank you. You're describing for us some of the themes and trends in part 1 of your book with Tara that you both co-edited. And the part 1's themes were around diversity, equity, and inclusion. So continuing to part 2, Tara, we'd like to talk about the chapters there that are organized around the theme of distance education. So what are some of the underlying themes in this section? Tara.
Yes, thank you. There were 5 institutions suggested by accreditors for exemplar assessment practices related to distance education. I will also be sharing 2 examples with you today. The first example is the chapter from Loyola University at Maryland. Their chapter focuses on trauma-informed course design. So with the increasing number of students entering our classrooms having experienced a traumatic event, this can have an impact on academic challenges. So what they did was an educational leadership professor and a director of digital teaching and learning developed a trauma-informed leadership course. This course was based on a scalable and transferable framework for trauma-informed instructional practice. This framework they call is called Commitment to Care. The chapter goes into explaining how institutions can actually use the Commitment to Care framework to their course design. Another example I want to share with you is from Columbia Southern University. They share how an effective assessment culture should not be a response to external pressures, but one that unifies faculty, staff, and academic leaders through intentional practices and procedures focusing on continuous improvement. The institution had created standardized processes that include curriculum mapping for all degree programs with the inclusion of identifying direct measures. They use the Quality Matters framework for course design, standardized data submission, and standardized rubrics to assess student learning outcomes. So by implementing a standardized assessment process, they actually maintained their process through unexpected disruptions.
Tara, thank you for sharing information about part two of the book, which included themes around distance education. Part three of Exemplars of Assessment in Higher Education includes several chapters devoted to career readiness. So, Jane Marie, what are some of the issues and opportunities presented in this section?
As Tara mentioned earlier, career readiness emerged as one of the timely topics for our volume two. Here's an example from BayPath University in Massachusetts. They share how they leveraged a DOE, a Department of Education grant, to develop and implement a guided pathways model. And that model embeds career readiness preparation in the learning experiences of students almost from day one at the institution. Their model works to ensure that readiness preparation is in all of the learning experiences, curricular, co-curricular, and any of the activities that they engage in. Their model works to create a bridge between the academic experience and the student's career aspirations. All of the coursework, their coach, so that all of their coursework, their activities, their co-curricular, all will line them up to be successful in their desired careers once they leave the institution. So BayPath University really goes into how that model is developed in this chapter. Another example comes from the College of Charleston in South Carolina, but actually their story begins at Ohio University. The model that they use for career readiness started at Ohio University, where they embedded portfolios in capstone courses. The unique way they did this is worth relating. Rather than just saying, okay, this is how we want to develop the capstone course, they created a special topics course and asked students to volunteer to take it. That course, the content of it, was building the capstone portfolio. So the students had a direct impact on what they thought would be helpful to them moving from academic to careers. They developed the portfolio along with the faculty. So this strategy started at Ohio University, and it was replicated at the College of Charleston. They adapted, of course, for their mission and their culture, but the approach was similar. But this chapter also kind of embeds the DEI topic as well, because they share how the murder of George Floyd impacted them and led to substantial changes in the way their courses were taught to assure that teaching and assessment practices are attentive to the way public power can be used to impose unfair and damaging injuries on marginalized communities. Their work began with the portfolio development, but their work included the furtherance of a more just and equitable society. So they really blended the two in this chapter.
Jane Marie, thank you for sharing timely examples around career readiness coming from part three of the book. Finally, in part four of the book, chapter authors share some strategies and insights concerning general education. What are some of the cross-cutting themes in this concluding section? For this question, we turn to Tara.
Four institutions that are represented in part four of the book, specifically relating to general education. I'm going to share the first example is from the American University of Paris. Their chapter is focused on a general education reform. However, it was actually a Middle States visit that prompted the institution to really reimagine their assessment process and how that process aligns with their mission and vision. So with a focus on global explorers, the institution developed a set of liberal arts core capabilities and a set of general education outcomes. So while many institutions have a single outcome related to global learning, for example, the American University of Paris chose to embed many aspects of global learning into both sets of outcomes. In addition to ensuring alignment between the two sets of outcomes, they curated a collection of direct assessment methods using analytic rubrics, and then built an assessment structure that would automate the process to minimize faculty time and effort. Another example I want to share with you is from the Texas State University. The authors focus on the importance of designing a relevant general education program, ensuring alignment across external stakeholders. The Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board has a prescribed general education curriculum with mandated competencies. So institutions that are actually searching for ways to figure out how to align processes and ensure that those processes meet the calls for accountability at all levels, right? The institution, state level and federal level. Texas State University provides a great model for assessing student learning at both the course and competency level.
Kara, thank you. We have been discussing the four parts of the book, Exemplars of Assessment in Higher Education, Volume 2. Those four parts expressed the themes around diversity, equity, and inclusion, distance education, career readiness, and general education. I'd like to ask you to think about how readers of both volumes of Exemplars of Assessment in Higher Education can use the information in their respective contexts. Why and how might this book be appropriate for various institutional types, say, such as a community college, four-year institutions, special-focused and comprehensive institutions, Jane Marie, really, the entire landscape of higher education. So how and why and where might this book be useful? Jane Marie.
Well, to answer that or respond to that question, I'm going to call your attention to the distinction between the two volumes and their titles. So the first one, Exemplars of Assessment in Higher Education, was Diverse Approaches to Addressing Accreditation Standards. And that really focused generally on showing how there are many ways to get to accreditation, compliance with accreditation standards. The second volume, again, Exemplars of Assessment in Higher Education, the name is Strategies for Changing Higher Education Environment. Now, why I bring this up is every institution, regardless of its type, deal with those two things, approaches to addressing the standards and how to deal with these crazy things that have been happening in our world. The institutions represented in these volumes are really quite diverse and include all those things that you mentioned: community colleges, liberal arts, research intensive, specialized, HBCU, international, Hispanic serving student, serving institution, and others. But regardless of the setting, in both books, there are gems of strategies that can be found useful to anyone, anywhere. So I'm at a high-intensive research university, but I found these nuggets to be really helpful to me. For example, in Volume 1, the Institute of American Indian Arts shared a really unique way of observing and documenting student learning before they used an authentic assessment rubric. Now, they looked at what the students were doing and gave them credit for all of the learning outcomes they brought to the table prior to even taking the course, and really gave credit to the students and agencies for what they have learned, and they honored what the students brought to the classes. It's definitely a nugget worth reading about. Another example, and I'll give it from Volume 1, is Gwyneth Mercy University and Bronx Community College collaborated on a chapter, and they teamed up to show how we can demonstrate compliance with accreditation standards. using a very simple three-question framework. And I have to tell you, I have employed it. It works. I think it's brilliant in its simplicity. Three questions. Do we have it? Do we use it? And does it work? And bringing in diversity, equity, inclusion, they added a fourth question later. Does it work for everyone? So it's just an example of how these little nuggets you can take. It's very similar to attending a conference, right? You go to a conference, you go to a lot of sessions, but there's always these certain things that you learn. You say, no matter what institution the idea came from, it can be applicable at my institution, and I can learn from this, and I can employ this where I'm working and what I'm doing. So I think both of the volumes come together in that way and are helpful regardless of your institutional type.
Jane Marie, thank you. You are describing the contents and the utility of both volumes of Exemplars of Assessment in Higher Education. And again, I invite listeners to consult the show notes of this episode for links to both of those books. So Tara, as we look to the future, where do you see additional opportunities to showcase and encapsulate exemplary assessment practices in higher education? I guess, in other words, what comes next? What are the emerging ideas that may perhaps eventually inform a third volume of this important work? Tara?
Well, Stephen, I'm not sure about a third volume. However, I would like to see future exemplars of assessment practices to include AI, artificial intelligence, and how AI is being used in teaching, learning, and assessment spaces. Also, perhaps assessing bias in the higher education environment. I'd also like to see future work being done on assessing student safety on campuses, and also looking wider and deeper at institutional assessment for improvement.
Tara, thank you. You're providing for us the agenda for the future and where we need to be attending to other topics related to this important work, even if they may or may not show up in a third volume. As we draw our time together to a close, we always ask our guests to leave our listeners with a brief final thought. So I'd like to ask both of you to do so right now. We'll start with Tara and conclude with Jane Marie. So Tara, your final thought.
Thank you, Stephen. So a few final thoughts. I want to let the audience know that assessment practices should really be adapted to your institutional culture. Assessment is not a one-size-fits-all approach. So what may seem like a good practice at one institution may actually fail miserably at a similar institution. So institutions need to be able to adapt practices as needed, be innovative, and also know that it's okay when things fail, right? I would also encourage institutions to see things through. Institutions have a really bad habit of jumping on to the next big thing without finishing what they've actually started. Faculty, staff, and academic leaders invest so much time in initiatives that actually may never bear fruit, right? And so really thinking about intentionality and the fact that intentionality matters.
Tara, thank you. And our final thought today comes to us from Jane Marie.
Well, I have to agree with Tara in really emphasizing that assessment of any kind should be approached in the context of institutional mission and institutional culture. There is no one best way to do things. And my thought is don't get caught up in replicating someone else's best practices, which almost sounds counterintuitive. Here we are seeing exemplars of assessment saying, hey, here are great examples you can follow. Follow, maybe yes, maybe just get an idea from, but make sure it's adapted to your own culture. I think, and I'm going to go back to where I started, the first example with Howard University, is they really gave credit to their own culture and their own storytelling to take what they've learned from the assessment environment, maybe what they've learned from other institutions, and really focusing and making sure that you tell your story in accreditation and assessment during the process. So what makes something truly appropriate and effective is that you know what you're trying to accomplish, and you can demonstrate that you are accomplishing your goals through your own lens of mission and culture. I really think that theme is throughout the two volumes, and it was talked about brilliantly, actually, by Heather Perfetti in the foreword, that accreditation, the way you achieve it, is personal, and everyone should take everything they learn from the environment and apply it as appropriate.
Context and culture matters. Wise words indeed. We've been speaking with Jane Marie Souza and Tara Rose, both of whom are co-editors of Exemplars of Assessment in Higher Education, Volume 2, Strategies for a Changing Higher Education Environment. Tara, Jane Marie, thanks so much for our time together. I've enjoyed our conversation and the preview of your book.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you for having us.
This has been Leading Improvements in Higher Education, the award-winning podcast service of the Assessment Institute in Indianapolis. Learn more and access other episodes at assessmentinstitute.iupui.edu. Our sponsor for this season is the Center for Assessment and Research Studies at James Madison University. Learn more at jmu.edu/assessment. Our podcast producers are Chad Beckner and Angela Bergman, with original music composed by Caleb Keith. If you know someone who might enjoy the podcast, please encourage them to give us a listen. We appreciate your help in spreading the word. I'm Stephen Hundley, inviting you to join us again for Leading Improvements in Higher Education.